The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Woo!
Yeah. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. Whoops.
That's a spoiler. No one's supposed to know it's you.
There we go.
And you're making money.
Making money. And as you can see, I'm the one working the sound effects tonight because @agent_70 is off seeing New York Islanders versus New York Rangers hockey game. Wasn't the one I was going for, but it works. So I'm joined tonight by @PCN_dirt on Twitter.
Yay!
Make sure to go to his website, popculturenetwork.com.
So I'm the only other person that was uncool enough to not have plans, huh?
And me.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've come to expect that from you, but I'm just saying, you know.
Again, not the one I was going for.
But again, it works.
Let's see. Make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com. You can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. And I also put a nice new page up where you can just go to theclicknation.com/live. And each week you'll have the embedded video for that week's show ready for you to view. So you can just bookmark that page and just refresh it once a week and have the newest episode up there live to watch on our website. And make sure to follow the Twitter account @CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. And make sure to follow the... let's see, there was a little echo there. Go to google.com/+TheClickNation to follow the TheClickNation Google Plus page. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and youtube.com/TheClickNation. We are part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. You can go to cspn.us and follow along and listen to all the various podcasts on the CSPN. You can also subscribe just to the Comic Book Chronicles podcast feed by going to bit.ly/CBCronPod. You can buy merchandise for us from the CSPN shop. Go to redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. Use the hashtags Comic Book Chronicles and CBCron on your favorite social media websites to join the conversation. And remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Roughly.
Yep.
As we say this at 9:27 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as the show is now a few minutes underway.
Yeah, but show shouldn't take us too long since it's just the two of us tonight. But, of course, we shall see.
Is that a challenge?
Yeah. See if we can finish the show before 11:15 tonight.
That's the and goal. Everything sucked. Done.
Let's see. The cinematic news for tonight. Let's see. Firefly's Jewel State will guest star on DC's Legends of Tomorrow, and that'll be a new ally for Rip Hunter's time-traveling team of heroes and villains. Her name is Rachel Turner, and she'll be played by Firefly and Stargate Atlantis fan favorite Jewel State. The live-action Teen Titans series is no longer moving forward at TNT.
Boo.
Wait, that's what I was going for. There we go.
Oh, my gosh. That everything dude, falls apart.
That's, I know, right? I usually just worry about reading from the notes, not having to read and work the soundboard.
I guess the one thing that I take as maybe a small grain of hope or optimism out of Teen Titans being canceled or stopped or however you want to say it is that the TNT president said, "We decided it wasn't where we wanted to go," as his comment. So basically, they were trying to develop a show, and maybe they got to a point where they realized they just didn't have the budget for the special effects they wanted, or, you know, something. And instead of compromising and instead of putting down something that wasn't exactly what they wanted, they just decided, now's not the time. Let's hold off. We'll end it. Maybe we can come back to it later. But I kind of like the idea that they're not just going to go ahead and push through with something that isn't quite, you know, ready. It hasn't fully developed to where they need it to be. So I take that as the tiny little piece of optimism in the story.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. They're not going to rush the product out there.
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 will be the first film shot on the new 8K Red weapon.
I don't know if you've seen anything of these Red cameras, but they are nice.
I have not.
Retarded expensive, but they are nice. They are crisp, high quality, just really good stuff. If you get a chance, go on YouTube and do a search for the Red cameras. Red Dragon, Red Weapon, Red... Trying to remember what the other names are, I forget. But yeah, they are really, really nice cameras.
And let's see, X-Men TV series Legion taps Fargo star for roguish role. And Roddy Cat leaves a note saying, "Wasn't Spike Storm's nephew from X-Men Evolution?" I believe he was. So the X-Men franchise surprised fans with news that the Marvelous Mutants would spawn not one, but two TV series, blah, blah, blah. Now our first official star has arrived, tapping Fargo Season 2 face Rachel Keller for a potential rogue role. I'll believe that series gets made when it's actually on the air, or if I see, like, you know, shots from the set.
You don't think it'll make it?
I guess Fox has Gotham and... Legion coming, so I guess they are in the business of doing comic book TV properties now.
Well, I mean, I can see them as trying to do, like, looking at Avengers and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and saying that they want to try to do the same thing by having an X-Men TV show and X-Men movies, and so maybe they're hoping that this is their bridge for that.
Yeah. But at least they're starting off with something that's not, you know, deep in X-Men lore. You know, Legion's just a third or fourth string character.
Yeah, if they tried to launch a series called Uncanny X-Men, everybody would freak out at how wrong it was and how terrible it was, even before the first images were ever leaked.
Yep. DC Comics sitcom Powerless ordered to pilot at NBC. So it's going to be a workplace comedy set in the DC universe.
It's basically a bunch of people without powers living in a world of superheroes and their day-to-day life of having to deal with being normal people in that world.
And it says it's not yet known what, if any, DC Comics heroes and villains may appear in the show as a series, as the title implies, is focused on regular folks. Yeah, what you just read.
I like how the director of Reno 911 is going to be part of the show. So that right there, at least, you know, if nothing else, that part makes me happy.
Yeah. Princess Leia is set to appear on the Star Wars Rebels animated show on Disney XD. Mm-hmm. Black Panther finally has a director in the Creed's Ryan Coogler. So be excited to see what that looks like in probably, 2 years?
Yeah, February 16th, 2018.
Ew.
I like how they've already picked a date. Like, I love how they do that. Like, oh, a couple years from now, we'll have a movie there.
Well, actually, they moved it because it was going to be 2017, I think. And then they pushed it back a year because of Spider-Man, I think. Everything got pushed back. Battlestar Galactica's Aaron Douglas to become the Turtle on The Flash. Douglas appeared as Chief Galen Tyrell through the entirety of the reimagined Battlestar Galactica, blah, blah, blah. The various versions of the Turtle in comic books use slow tricks to battle the Flash, but EW reports the television version is a meta who can slow time itself. Okay.
All right.
The Russo brothers tease supporting Avengers will become leads in Infinity War. Kind of goes without saying. And they also want to direct the Black Widow film. They want to make all the Marvel movies.
I think a lot of people want to see a Black Widow film.
Yeah, I think the fan outcry has reached a level now where they almost, it'd be smart for them to look to do one, a Black Widow movie. And plus, it's not like it'll just be her by herself. You can add various heroes to it, just like how she was a supporting character in Captain America 2 and upcoming 3 movies. There's a second Marvel TV comedy in development after the Damage Control series. And I guess it'll also be coming from John Ridley. Agent Carter Season 2 is set to include tie-ins to Doctor Strange universe. Batman v Superman director Zack Snyder says Justice League will explore Doomsday's mythology. Jonah Hex will appear in Legends of Tomorrow's Old West Adventure, which I guess I hadn't given Legends of Tomorrow that much thought, but that just makes total sense to include him. Just like, I guess, the Justice League animated series, anytime they did time travel to the West, he would be in that episode. Oh, and today, Jeff Johns teased that the Legion of Superheroes would be appearing in a DC live-action show, but would not say which one. Are you a Legion fan?
I was of the classic Legion. And then in 94, when they did Zero Hour and they rebooted everything, I lost interest. And I've never been able to get back into it. But when I was in high school, I used to hunt down all the back issues of the Legion series and Tales of the Legion and all that stuff. And I had several hundred issues, throughout the years. I loved the Legion of Superheroes, and then they flushed it all down the toilet and rebooted everything, and then I couldn't get into it anymore.
Who's known for a good Legion's run as far as creative teams go?
Well, Jim Shooter. That's how he got his big DC push, I guess you could say. He was a teenager in high school, and he sent in some story ideas and they liked him, and so he fleshed them out into scripts, and he ended up getting a job doing Legion of Superheroes. So that was his big thing. Keith Giffen is another guy who did a lot of Legion of Superheroes stories, and one of the big things about the Legion was that characters would die because it was a team book, and you always had 20 characters that they were trying to juggle around, and so a character would die, and the death was permanent. Like, there was they never came back. It was never a dream. There was never a clone. It was, in those old stories, it was always a character would die, and that was it, and they were gone. And so they had statues of their fallen comrades, in the hall, so you could always see them, and they could always pay tribute to them, and it was always kind of in the background that as any character that you liked, no matter how popular they were, no matter how much you liked them, there was always a chance that they could die in battle. And when they were dead, they were gone for good. And that's how the stories were always laid out. So it was really good back in those days.
Okay.
The 90s ruined comics.
All those polybag covers.
Yeah, when they started doing the chrome covers and kids in those days. So, yeah.
All right. First ad read for tonight is for Busted Tees. This episode of the Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as BB-8 Like Thumbs Up and Droid Evolution, Star Wars The Force Awakens, Rick and Morty as Legos, Samoies, the main faces of Samuel L. Jackson as emojis, and much more are on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today. All right, so now getting to the comic book news of the week. Oh, and it actually is a light week. Let's see. Coming soon from Funko Civil War. So I guess they're doing Funko Civil War toys. Let me click on the collectorcores.com link here. Oh yeah, you can get, I guess, Civil War inspired Funko toys. So you got Cap, Iron Man, War Machine, Black Panther, which I'll be buying, Black Widow, Scarlet Witch, Agent 13, Winter Soldier, Crossbones, with mask and without, Falcon, a couple of Crossbones. Okay, so they got the various characters with their mask off. Marvel pushes back Carnage number 2 into February because of some unforeseen circumstances involving the artist. What's this? Stan Lee, the legend behind Marvel, has revealed that he can't read comic books anymore due to his failing eyesight.
Ooh.
He doesn't need to read them anymore. He's given us plenty of comic goodness over the years. He probably doesn't read them anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder how many he actually read.
Yeah, even when he could read. Marvel released two teases or teaser images this week. The first was for Dead No More. Second was for Best Beware My Sting. All leading up, I suspect, to the April 2016 solicits being released next week.
So you think it's a Yellow Jacket series?
That or Wasp, I guess people are assuming, which I guess the color scheme matches both of them, so why not? I'm more concerned with the Dead No More. I was thinking maybe, I wonder if it could be Cyclops being brought back from life, even though we never found out exactly how he was killed in the 8 months from between Secret Wars and all different Marvel. But lots of speculation there. New Star Wars comic was announced today. Star Wars Poe Dameron from Charles Soule and Phil Noto. Ongoing series this time, not a limited. Part of me was like excited for it. The other part was like, can't they get someone besides Charles Soule to do all these Star Wars books?
Yeah, but a lot of those guys are probably like pitching ideas like crazy. Oh, I could do this. I could do this. Let me do it.
Oh, yeah. You know, the minute they got that Star Wars license, folks were just throwing ideas out. But at least there'll be a very pretty comic from Phil Noto. And I do like Charles Soule, too. So, but part of me was just like, yeah, let someone else get a shot. And Hastings and Valiant are teaming up for a Comics College. So Hastings stores across the country are teaming with Valiant Entertainment for a four-week Comics College. So that's kind of interesting. And that's really it for news. Yeah, we got all this time to review the comics from the past month. So we start with our co-hosts who aren't here tonight.
Well, wait, do you have to do another ad?
I'll split it. Since I just did one like less than 5 minutes ago, I'll do it after we do some reviews.
All right. Well, do you want to start with the books that neither of us are going to have on our list?
Yeah, we can do that.
Or do you want to just jump into the major book of forever, which is Secret Wars 9? You want to just get it out of the way?
Yeah, we might as well.
that was a big one.
I liked it. I really, that's for once, the final issue of an event series landed, and I was thoroughly enjoyed with the outcome.
Even though it's a Hickman mumbo-jumbo ending?
No, because it was, well, I mean, there's still mumbo-jumbo in it, but the majority of it I understood. The only parts I wasn't too sure on was stuff with Black Panther at the end, and him and Doom's fight, just because visually it was kind of hard to understand what was going on, but that was mostly because it was two godlike beings fighting each other.
Yeah, but, in a big white room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But everything else, like the whole Reed versus Doom showdown, I followed that. At least as far as I know, I followed it pretty clearly. I could just be misinterpreting things.
And we got some answers to why certain things are happening in the new Marvel universe, that we've got Ben and Human Torch are out there wherever doing their own things, not part of the Fantastic Four. We know why the Fantastic Four has disappeared and you don't see them anymore. We know why Doom looks different. So we got some of those answers, but we didn't get like real specifics on who remembers and who doesn't. And we don't know like how much Ben knows and how much he doesn't know. And, you know, we just know that he's not part of the Fantastic Four right now because they went off on this other journey. We got what appears to be a glimpse that Doom remembers. So that'll be something interesting they can play off of, you know, as they go forward. But we don't, Black Panther took the reality gem in that final battle, so he would have some hand in rebuilding this universe, supposedly, but we don't know why, like, why was Miles Morales saved? Like, who picked him? Who said, oh, he's the one who gets to make it, you know? Because as far as Ultimate End showed us, it's just the whole universe turned white, and then when it was suddenly reconstituted, there he was, and there were his friends, and there was his mom, and... You know, so we don't really have any answers to that. And there's no explanation why he would be picked, or, you know, why none of the other... Are there any other characters from the Ultimate Universe that did survive, or any of them, you know, the alternate versions? Why does the Squadron Supreme, why are they the ones that, you know, survived this thing? So there's still little pockets of stuff that I think they'll never be explained, and that's part of the whole 8 months later thing, is they have this ability to just say, okay, time has passed, stuff happened, we don't have to tell you what it is, but now, you know, here we go. And, you know, we've seen the results of what happened long before we actually got this ending, so that's another thing to remember is we're reading this out of order, but... I enjoyed it. I thought the big battle was, you know, epic and fun, and it played out like a big conclusion to this story, and it also, you know, played out as a conclusion to Hickman's run on Fantastic Four from, what, 5-6 years ago? Like, this all plays off of his run in the book from back then, so this is one, you know, giant story that technically he's been working on. It started in Fantastic Four, it moved to Avengers, and now it ended in Secret Wars. And it's nice to see how the story fleshed out and developed, but now I'm at the point where, okay, it's all over. There's nothing really now in the Marvel Universe that's grabbing my interest, because the only other pocket of the Marvel Universe that I had interest in was the Deathlok, Punisher, Black Widow area, and all of that's over. So between the Hickman stuff here with the Avengers being done and with all of those other, you know, vigilante dark books being over, I'm just kind of wandering through the Marvel Universe at this point.
You just reminded me of something. I totally forgot about the time or reality gem being used by Black Panther and what that ultimately means. It's kind of curious that, I guess, so basically Molecule Man gave Reed the power that Doom had because Reed said he would have done a better job, and Doom agreed with him. So, but they decided the FF aren't a super team anymore. They're a family that are basically creating multiverses out in the cosmos now. But it's curious that I think Reed had some lines saying that Johnny and Ben didn't deserve the fate of being with them. They should, you know, I guess, lead their own lives. But they decided to take the Future Foundation kids with them, which is kind of odd. It's like, I felt like they would be closer to Ben and Johnny, of course. So why not keep them with them, but then make these kids go off and be world builders? That's kind of a lot of responsibility for some kids.
Well, obviously, Reed, being the smartest man in the room, knows something that we don't. So yeah. Maybe. I just wonder how long it's going to be until we see them again. Like, is this... I wonder if their disappearance is actually the foundation of some other crossover that's going to happen, some other big epic event that's going to happen, you know, maybe next summer. Like, not this year, but maybe the next year, something big will come to destroy Earth. You know, Galactus has built an army, and the army's going to devour all of existence. And suddenly, you know, Reed and Sue will reappear, and we've been fighting him in every multiverse, and now he's back here, or something like that. Like, I just wonder if that's what that's leading up to.
Yeah. Well, if you're reading the Ultimates book, you know that the Devourer of Worlds isn't a Devourer anymore.
Well, yeah, but they're rebuilding the multiverse.
Yeah, so there could be a Galactus from some other multiverse.
Right. Roddy Cat says there could be another event at some point that explains the 8-month gap. So maybe they'll do like Marvel Convergence or something.
I do like from a storytelling standpoint, I love like so many possibilities that this new status quo sets up. Like you said, I could see for all intents and purposes, I'll keep calling them the FF or Fantastic Four. I could see the Fantastic Four being gone for like 2 years and then coming back and like some big epic event thing that it'll probably be tied into whatever Al Ewing is setting up, because he seems like he has some grand ideas that he's cooking up with the ISO 8 whatever molecule or
the video game power.
Yeah, that thing. I was going to say, it's weird that I think it was in the issue of Uncanny Avengers, Johnny mentions that how, you know, Reed and Sue, or one of the two, or both of them are dead. What would give him that idea that they're dead? Like, from the Battle World ending and then the new Prime Earth starting, like, what would give him the idea that Reed and Sue are dead, I wonder? Like, part of me wonders, like, should his and Ben's, like, minds be erased so they don't even remember them? Or does Reed just want them to think that they're dead?
Yeah, I don't know. That's just one of those things that you didn't get answered here that you hope maybe they'll address at some point. But I'm not holding out hope that we're going to get any more answers than what we got in this issue.
Right. But overall, did you enjoy this issue 9?
Yeah, overall I did. I mean, overall, like I said, it felt like a good wrap up to everything that he's been doing for several years. It felt like you had this big epic battle. You know, really big battles always come down to the top two guys just duking it out in old school fisticuffs, and that's what you got. And the artwork was really good. Like, I really love the way that they played with the pages a lot. We got there's one page that's all the face of Victor and the face of Reed, and it's like a checkerboard.
Yeah.
And it's the faces kind of layered on top of each other, and it's one of those things where you look at it and you wonder just how long, like, did he draw two pictures and cut them apart and glue them together, or, you know, was he trying the logistics of drawing these two faces? But just looking at that kind of stuff is just great to see the artwork played out and just how beautiful it is.
Yeah. It, as good as this issue was, it also made me wish that it had came out on time before all new Marvel stuff had started. Just, I feel like the impact would have been even greater. Plus, I wonder, it's like they did that whole reveal in Invincible Iron Man #1 on the last page, but if this had came out the same day as Secret Wars number 9, like it was intended, if you read them in order, you would have saw that Doom's face was revealed in at the end of Secret Wars 9. And then once you saw Iron Man go to Latveria at near the end of Invincible Iron Man number 1, it wouldn't have been this big page turning like, moment.
Well, but we see Doom not only take off his mask and his face being okay, but then he laughs. And he laughs like it's not like an evil, like Mr. Burns kind of, you know, cackle. This is like a very joyful Walt Disney laugh here at the end, coming from Doom. And so it changes. Like, I'm going to have to go back and read Iron Man stuff again, because I've been reading it all along, like, not trusting Doom, you know, with this eye that he's got this nefarious plan going on, and that's not, that maybe that's not necessarily what's going on in everything that he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah, the minute I finished this, I was like, I want to go back and read that first issue of Invincible Iron Man just to see if I missed anything. But yeah, okay. Definitely enjoyed Secret Wars number 9. I'm trying to think, we're not forgetting anything, are we? I like how we found the reason why Miles Morales' mother is alive again. That's a kind little nod.
Although we haven't seen his dad, so we don't know if his dad is there, right?
Well, in the preview pages for the first issue, we've seen him.
Oh, okay. I didn't look at those. I saw that email come in, but I didn't look at it yet.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, then.
All right. Some more stuff from the people that aren't here. I'll pick one since you, I guess, chose Secret Wars. A-Force number 1 came out, I think it was last week. It was all right. I enjoyed the art more than the story, but just because the story was a lot of build-up, and it's one of those, you know, assembling the team type deals, so, like, not a lot happens. It basically deals with Singularity, who crosses over from Battle World to the Prime Earth, and she's, like, going around.
Where was she in Battle World?
She was in the A-Force Secret Wars series. And she's, like, going around trying to find the new versions of her friends that she remembers from Secret Wars, but they, of course, don't know her. So I think the only heroes that show up in this issue are She-Hulk, Captain Marvel, and Medusa.
So I'm looking at this picture. I'm guessing this is Dazzler behind She-Hulk's other arm, and I have no idea who this person in the back is.
The background back or the far left?
Behind the Dazzler. Some girl chewing bubble gum.
Okay, that's Nico from Runaways.
Okay.
At least that's who it's supposed to be. She doesn't show up in this issue, so. But that's who, Nico was in the Secret War series, so it's basically the same lineup, minus Miss America, I guess. So, let's see. Let me read Agent 70's notes. Singularity remembers the events of Secret Wars, where the rest of A-Force does not. This issue merely shows the band getting back together, but it's rather empty on story. So basically same thing I said.
All right, fair enough.
Let's see. He also talked about Doctor Strange number 4. He's a big fan of Doctor Strange. I actually had this jot down on my long list of books that I was going to choose from, so he says it was a strong, consistent read. The price of magic is high, and it's a price that Stephen Strange is willing to pay. And he pays it by eating a bunch of nasty things.
Okay.
And so someone's been killing Sorcerer Supremes in other dimensions. And I guess the one cool thing I liked about it was just like he talks about the price that Doctor Strange pays. So basically we learned that for him to be able to conjure all these spells that he does, you know, it would take a toll on it takes a toll on the human body that the human body can't really, normally the human body wouldn't be able to, what's the word I'm looking for?
Withstand?
Yeah, withstand all that power. So it's like not mutated his body, but it's kind of twisted his body in a way where he can't eat normal foods. So he has to eat this strange glop that could have tentacles or other kinds of things. So,
okay.
Yeah. That, it was just like a little side thing we learned in that issue, but it stuck out to me.
I don't know. I read the first one, and I just didn't really feel it, and I never really went back to it.
Okay. So you want me to keep choosing from?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm okay. Keep going through Agent 70's list.
I'll let you do Rowdy Cats then.
Okay.
Squadron Supreme number 3. I have not read this yet, but it came out this week. He said, no clear-cut winner between the Squadron and the Uncanny Avengers, and now Titania has brought the Squadron to Weird World. Time to stop getting the physical copy. Uh-oh.
See, I'm the exact opposite on this. I like this story. I like the Squadron Supreme. Like, of this book, if you look at the cover, it has the Avengers logo up in the top left corner, that all the Avengers books have. And so for me, this is the only Avengers book that I'm reading right now. I'm not reading All New, All Different. I'm not reading Uncanny. I'm not reading, you know, Ultimates, whatever. I tried all of those, and I didn't care for the first issues of any of those. Squadron Supreme is the only one that I've really gotten into. And I enjoy this story a lot because this fits that corner of the Marvel Universe that technically I would say had been filled with Black Widow and Punisher and Deathlok before Secret Wars. They're kind of taking that space now in the new world by being the type of people that would cut off Namor's head in order to save thousands of lives. You know, they're that type of hero. And so I enjoy that storyline. The original Human Torch, Jim Hammond makes an appearance in here. And then they get whisked away from the battle, the battle that they appeared to be winning. But they get pulled away into Weird World to make their escape. And the thing that surprised me is, well, it's Weird World that they're bringing in here, but this is the third book to pull in Weird World between Black Knight. There's the actual Weird World series, and now Squadron Supreme is playing into that, which makes me think that this push for Weird World must be heading towards something, whether it be in the cinematic universe, whether it be maybe Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the finale for the season, someone gets stranded in Weird World. I don't know. But for Weird World to just, you know, pop back up and now suddenly it's in all these different books, it must be something that they're building to with that title for some reason. I don't know why. I don't know what the appeal is of Weird World, but it's there.
And the next issue of Extraordinary X-Men number 6 will involve Weird World. So,
now, there you go.
Another book.
So it's got to play into something. I don't know why everyone would use, of all things, everyone's using Weird World. So it's got to be building to something.
Yeah. The issue 2 came out last week, but I haven't gotten around to reading it yet.
I don't know if I want to.
Like, I like the first issue.
Like I kind of flipped through it.
It's one of those. It's not necessary. It's not, you know, mandatory read. So, you know, take it or leave it. Yeah. So back to Squadron. I read the first issue when it came out, and I wasn't super enthused with it. Second issue, I was like, okay, this is a little better. So now it's like, you know, I was nay and yay. So now I need to read the third one to see if it keeps which way it sways me. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 1 came out this week. Agent 70 says, I enjoy this because I enjoy the show. That's probably why I'm not going to read it. Not that I'm not enjoying the show, but I don't care about the, I don't want to read about Fitz and Simmons in comic form.
Yeah. And I saw Deathlok on the cover, so I thought maybe I'd read it. You know, because again, to tie in, maybe it ties in with that series and I might enjoy it. Nope. And I started to flip through it and I'm like, I don't know. Cause I don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I don't know who these people are. I don't know what's going on. There's a lot of Coulson in this, and I'm not a big fan of Coulson, so I just set it back down and moved on.
Yeah, I like Mockingbird, but she's a lot better in Amazing Spider-Man as a supporting character, so there's that. I do like Quake, but I'll just wait for the Quake series to launch, because that'll probably come eventually, yeah. Quake solo series. So yeah, I have no interest in checking this out. Let's see, he's got Huck number 3 down, which I need to read also. Huck is endearing, but I may be cutting this book off the physical list as well.
Hmm. What is Huck about?
He's taken, Mark Millar's taken the like the Huckleberry Finn character, and I guess kind of like using him in the current day, where except giving and also giving him like these extraordinary powers, where it's like it's this guy named Huck. He lives in a town, and he helps the people. Like he makes a list each day of like, I'm going to help Jim Bob build his fence down the street. I'm going to go grocery shopping for the old lady, blah, blah, blah. He also did some like globetrotting thing where he went and rescued some girls from like some third world nation where they were being captive or whatever. And then this new young lady moves into the town and she learns about Huck and goes, of course, runs to the local news, to the national news and reveals the secrets. And then like all the media shows up at Huck's front door. So, but I believe Mark Millar said, and there's a backup story or preview pages in this book for his next series he's got coming out called, I think it's called Monstrous. With Stuart Immonen.
I thought Monstrous was already out.
That's what I said. Yeah, that's why I wasn't positive. It's something that sounds like Monstrous. Let me see if I can, maybe if I go to his feed, he'll say what it is. Let's see. I'll keep looking, but yeah, I want to make sure I get that name right. Oh, and also I think it was last night or two nights ago, friend of the show, William Bruce West, alerted me that the Click Nation's 5-star review for Chrononauts shows up on the back cover of the trade.
Oh,
actually, wow. Let me see if I can do my screen sharing here and make sure I get the picture up. I took a screenshot of it. It's funny. What's funny is because I bought it for my brother for Christmas, but I never actually like flipped through it to see. I just like bought it because I was like, hey, I like the series. He'll probably like it too. And of course, we have a 5-star review on the back of it. So let's see. How do you do a screen sharing thing here?
You swipe in from the left hand side, and there's a green screen with a white arrow.
Got it. Let me make this maximize this so it shows up.
Uh-huh.
Oh. Does it show up?
yeah, kind of. Well, it's showing. Okay, I'm talking. You got to talk.
I'm talking. Oh.
Yeah, it's going down into infinity when you do that. So.
Hold on. I know what I did wrong. Let's try this one more time. Where are you? Wait, go back. Where did it go?
Technology, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I'll do this often.
Did William Bruce West take a picture of it?
Hold on. How about now?
There we go. Jaw-dropping, magnificent, breathtaking, big and fun. And then 5 stars from the Click Nation, 5 stars from Comic Vine, and 5 stars from the Big Comic Page.
Yeah.
Wow, look at that.
So now,
spelled Click right.
Yeah, I know, right? He did include our 5 stars in a couple of the issues of Starlight, a series from like 2 years ago, I think. Hmm. I did buy those issues when I saw them on the stands. So now I just need to get like the quote, like Comic Book Resources gets. They're just 5 stars. So that was cool. Let's see. Totally Awesome Hulk number 2. Agent 70 says, we find out what really gets Amadeus Chow angry and more clues as to what happened to Bruce Banner. And another favorite of ours, Vision number 3, creepy interlude involving Agatha Harkness. This issue may make more sense after reading the next issue.
I like this series. This is one that I can totally agree on is worth reading. And we've talked about reasons why on this show before. The narrative voice that it has is very uncommon, and it fits this title very well. The artwork is good. The family, for being androids, they're kind of creepy, but they're trying to make them as human as possible. You get Tony Stark appearances in here, which are cool. But this particular issue, issue number 3, the way it's laid out, it's very confusing the first time you read it through. Once you get about maybe 3/4 of the way through, then you begin to understand like what's actually happening, and you have to go back and start reading it again to figure out, you know, what it is you've been seeing happening here. So I enjoy that. I enjoy when the storytelling's a little more complex and you have to, you know, kind of flip back and forth and give everything a second read in order to keep up on what's going on. I like the characters. I like the story. I like the artwork. This is a good book. I would have put this on my list, except that I saw Agent 70 had already done it, and so then that gave me the excuse to put something else on my slot. If he hadn't done it, then I would have put it on mine.
So the only thing that kind of confused me was the Agatha Harkness stuff. But then right. I read something, I think it was on Bleeding Cool or one of the comic websites that were saying, like, it looks like they're setting up something for a future, like, event. Oh, was it Agatha Harkness? Like, she sees visions. And they were saying, could that lead to what's happening in Civil War II, where it's like a person that can predict the future or predict events before they happen? But then I was like, that'd be kind of weird for like a book like The Vision to be tying into something that serious. But hey, you never know. But Agatha Harkness also appears in the Scarlet Witch comic, I believe. Mm. But I don't really know because I'm not reading that.
I don't read that one, yeah.
All right, so that's it for Agent 70's comics that at least that one of us have also not read.
Okay. All right, so now we're going to move to Roddy Cat.
Yep.
All right, so let me hop down to his list.
Before you do that, let me get the last ad read in for tonight. My Comic Shop. Today's podcast is also sponsored by My Comic Shop. Go to cspn.us, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, click on the My Comic Shop banner and order from a vast selection of new releases, back issues, vintage classics, graphic novels, and more to be delivered right to your door. Why bother schlepping to the local comic book store when you can order your books online? My Comic Shop through cspn.us. Do it today.
Yay. All right, so One of the books Roddy has here is Darth Vader 15, which he says, and Vader Down has ended. Nothing crazy happened, but ended like you expected it would. Like Secret Wars? Question mark there at the end. I can see where he's coming from, and I agree in the sense that this crossover takes place before Empire, so you can't do a whole lot because we know where the characters are going to be after this. You know, you can't kill off Chewbacca or something like that because he comes back, you know. So the only thing that they could really play with is Aphra. She's the only real character. I mean, there are the other droids, the torture droids that Vader has, you know, with Aphra, but Aphra is the only character that's really, really in play here, and she becomes part of the ending. She is a big part of how the story ended, and so going forward, this series has set up Aphra being a key character that the Rebels need to get information from, need to know more about, need to know who she is and what she knows and all that kind of information. So the crossover did what it needed to do with putting Aphra, who's been in the Darth Vader book, now in the Star Wars book, and giving that crossover there where the characters are interacting with each other now. So it did the job it needed to do, and I understand why it had the limitations on it. I agree that you get to the end and you're like, okay, well, I mean, you can't kill Vader, you can't kill Luke, you know, there's nothing big you can really do with those characters, so Aphra is the only one here, and this is the story was, it seems, built in order to open her up to the other side of the story. So I enjoyed it as far as being a, you know, 6-issue story. If they collect that into a book, it'll be a good read. I can see how a casual fan who hasn't been following the books but walks into a comic book store and can pick up the 6-issue collection of this, they're going to miss some things because if they haven't been reading Vader, they don't know who some of the other villains are and whatever. But it is a good action story, and it plays into, honestly, there's Luke in this is trying to find an old Jedi temple, which of course is a theme that we see in Episode 7. So they put something in this story that plays out, you know, technically 20 years later or whatever when Episode 7 is. So I give it some credit for even going so far as to plant seeds for what we see later in Episode 7. So it was a good story.
I did not realize this was the finale of Vader Down.
Yeah, I guess when I heard about it and they said it was 6 parts, like I kind of thought to myself, well, that's good because it's not long and it's not going to drag on and on and on. But when it's flipping between the two books and they're coming out so quickly that, you know, it doesn't take long to get through the 6 parts. And so now that it's over, it's like, oh, it's already done. Like that was fast, especially since Secret Wars was 8 parts and it took it 14 years to come out. So that makes a difference.
I thought there would be a bookend. Like there was a Vader, wasn't there a Vader Down 1?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the next Darth Vader 16 will be like a Vader Down epilogue issue or something like that, you know.
Yeah, so I haven't read this yet, so that's the reason I'm like, oh, that was the end. I need to get to that.
Well, you should.
I will.
Okay. Next on Roddy's list, we have Guardians of Infinity number 2, which Roddy states, round 1, fighting each other. Round 2, fighting the newcomers. Not well. Side story, Space Knights and Rocket versus Dream Eaters or something. I didn't read issue 2. I read issue 1. My son and I have been reading Guardians of the Galaxy and the Rocket Raccoon and, you know, whatever books. He read the first issue of this and said, I don't get it. I don't care. I don't want to read it anymore. So since he abandoned it, I abandoned it as well. So I didn't read Guardians of Infinity number 2. And apparently I did not miss out a whole lot.
I read the first issue and I was kind of like, eh, I don't really need to keep up with this. But I forget if it was Roddy or Agent 70 that said they enjoyed the first issue. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll maybe try the initial arc and see how it goes. But I have yet to read issue 2.
I think it's one of those things where when it comes in, I'll probably flip through it and see, you know, does anyone else make an appearance? Does something big happen? You know, does this cross over with another title? And just kind of keep an eye on it. And if something happens, I might read that particular issue again. But I just don't see myself reading this every month.
Right.
All right. Next up, we have Scarlet Witch number 2. Wanda fights the Minotaur, or so it seems. We learn a little more about witchcraft being broken and possibly who's behind it. Wonders if this plays into Doctor Strange any. So this may, I guess the magic books of the Marvel Universe may start to tie together.
How many magic books are, well, I guess they count Hercules as a magic book, because I think some stuff is going on in there too. So was it Hercules, Scarlet Witch, Doctor Strange? Am I missing one?
Probably. But
yeah. Okay.
I'm sure there's going to be something somewhere with someone that does something for some reason in some story. Yeah. But that's as far as I'm willing to research into it. All right. Oh, and Roddy Cat just tweeted that, yes, Agatha Harkness shows up in this Scarlet Witch.
So, is she dead also?
Are you ever really dead in these books?
Or are you a god now?
I don't know. I might flip through it just to see if it ties in at all with that vision. But it's not on the top of my list, I can tell you that much. Let's see. Roddy's take on Secret Wars number 9. He says it's all come down to this, the final chapter of Hickman Mumbo Jumbo. Wait, did we really need another issue in 4 months for this? It was stitched together well enough, I guess. So he didn't seem to enjoy it as much as we did, but at least he's happy it's over, I guess. And that's something we can all be thankful for. Spider-Gwen number 4. Oh, what?
I was going to say, especially Hickman and Ribic, I'm sure.
Uh-oh, Agent 70's joining us.
What's up, everybody? I'm gonna get the effects up in a second. Just getting back from the hockey game. The Rangers lost to the Islanders.
Wow!
It starts at 7, so I was able to get because it was playing here in Brooklyn. So I was at Barclays Center. I was able to hop in a cab, get here pretty quickly, so I could catch the tail end of the show. I was actually listening off of my phone, off of YouTube, while I was coming in. So I heard you guys going through my picks.
Sorry. Yeah, I did yours.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I'm happy to make it on, you know, on board the show tonight. So
in your dark little hidden bunker.
That's right.
Absolute black.
Well, I dressed pretty dark today, so I'll try to put on some lights to brighten it up a little bit.
All right. Well, you can chime in if you read any of these books. But Spider-Gwen number 4, we have from Roddy here. Gwen versus Harry Osborn and Goblin Squad, plus a Weird World D&D. And sometimes you got to roll the hard 20. So another Weird World reference?
Yes. Weird World is getting pushed. I did read this without spoiling too much of what happens.
Did you hear our discussion about Weird World earlier?
I caught maybe the tail end of it, that it's getting a push, that I heard something when you guys were talking about Uncanny Avengers. Or Squadron Supreme, I apologize.
Yeah. Squadron Supreme has a Weird World reference, and of course Correct. The Weird World book. This apparently has a Weird World book. What's the other one that had a Weird World? There's something else we just talked about.
Oh, Extraordinary X-Men's next issue, number 6, is going to Weird World.
Yeah. So what is going on with Weird World?
They're pushing it. Obviously, this may or may not pop up in my my write-up for New Jersey Comic Con, but I spoke to Frank Thierry. I think I may have mentioned this on the show, that Frank Thierry got the Black Knight book, which I did not read this week. But he got that book because Marvel's pushing Weird World.
But why?
They may see it as a potential, you know, new, you know, kind of like tapping into fantasy, as opposed to, you know, like you see how there's a little bit of magic being explored with Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch. And even with Dr. Voodoo being placed prominently on the Uncanny Avengers. So maybe they're doing, you know, maybe they're trying to delve into a little bit more sword and sorcery too. I'm not sure. Honestly, at the end of the day, you know, Thierry didn't say anything but, you know, Marvel is pushing Weird World. So that's how, you know, it took that aspect of that Black Knight story to get his story published.
Well, I don't know. I think it's got to come up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or in one of the Marvel movies. It's got to be lame. It seems to be too much just for them to try to randomly have a corner of the Marvel Universe. It's got to be tying into a movie or TV property.
Possibly. But, you know, up until now, you know, Weird World was just an older Marvel publication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they revived the title. I don't know if it was for trademark or copyright purposes.
Yeah, but this is way too much of a push just to have that trademark revival.
Right.
I mean, that's a one-issue special that you put out just to keep the trademark.
Right.
So, all right. Next we have Ultimates number 3. Even after Secret Wars, people can't stop messing with time, and the Ultimates trek to the border of the Federation and Klingon... Oh, wait. and again with the Cthulhu? Come on.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
So did you read Ultimates 3?
I did. I don't have my tablet on me, so I can't jump to it. I don't want to make too much noise on the mic to actually pull out my physical copy. But I did read this. It's a lot of interstellar travel based on using America Chavez's power, Miss America Chavez's power, and we're basically delving into an aspect of the Blue Marvel's history in this book. So, you know, ultimately what we're dealing with now is kind of a different aspect of this book now that we've seen what they did to Galactus. You know, it's a lot of big ideas, space travel and all that. So,
and the Klingon Empire, apparently.
Did you guys talk about Secret Wars 6, 9? I presume you did.
Yes, we did. But here, let me finish up Roddy Cat here, and then you can talk about it for a minute.
No, I was just going to say that an aspect of Ultimates now becomes, or at least retroactively, a little bit more clearer with one of the things that wrapped up Secret Wars number 9, which is the whole spacefaring thing.
Oh, with the Fantastic Four?
No. With Black Panther, you know, being a little bit more...
Oh, having the gem?
That and just kind of looking outwards towards space. That's why he's involved with this.
I forgot Secret Wars 9. This is the one thing we forgot, Tim, is that we saw Wakanda now has a space program.
Right.
And they have apparently the premier space program on Earth. They're launching rockets apparently left and right into outer space. Mm-hmm. So.
Right. It's their Alpha Flight. So... I thought that was that part actually, you know, kind of retroactively made the premise of Ultimates a little bit more, you know, kind of linked it all together by saying, oh, okay, you know, this is why, or this is how this particular aspect of the Panther's plan has come together. You know, he's looking forward outwards.
It's almost as if Secret Wars 9 had come out first, before Ultimates number 1, it's almost as if the story would have made more sense.
Perish forbid, right?
All right. Obi-Wan and Anakin. This came out Christmas week, I remember. It's Obi-Wan and Anakin between Episode 1 and Episode 2 era. We get shades of Anakin being Anakin as a young apprentice.
Okay, look, I'm not in the bunker anymore.
Oh, there's light. A shelf full of toys. Okay, so I don't know if anyone else read number 1 of this. This was one of those books where it was fine. Like, everything in it was technically proficient. But you're dealing with an era of Star Wars that is far removed from where we are now in the current, you know, movie and everything. So, excuse me. You're dealing with a story set so far in the past with characters that you already know how they all end up that it's for me, it's just tough to get into. Like, I'm not big enough into Star Wars that I care about what they did on every Tuesday of every month, you know? So I just have a hard time getting excited about this book, even though the artwork was nice, the story was, you know, well-constructed, but I just know how it all plays out in the long run, so I'm just not all that interested. I don't know if anyone else read it.
The art was the major draw for me, but yeah, the story was just kind of meh.
I have no desire to read about young Anakin Skywalker.
And
I just don't.
There's an Obi-Wan in that title too, you know?
I know.
It's not Obi-Wan and young Anakin.
All right. And then the final book from Roddy Cat's list is Starfleet Academy Issue 2. Uhura hits a Starfleet wall in attempting to uncover info into a classified system. Meanwhile, 3 years later, Talon and crew continue thriving in their competition, and then it's party time! Except for Talon, who comes across Uhura's conundrum. This is set in the Starfleet Academy days of the Star Trek crew, so this is them younger. I think it plays a little younger. It plays a little more... I don't want to say Dawson's Creek, necessarily, because I think that gives the wrong intentions, but it's more of the CW network, maybe, version of Star Trek. Them younger and hipper and cooler and flashier.
That's funny.
But yeah, so it's not bad. I mean, it's fine for what it is, but there you go. All right, so that's it for Roddy's list. All right, before Tim and I get into anything that we had, Agent 70, did you want to say anything more about any of the books that we covered off your list? Secret Wars, Extraordinary X-Men, Squadron Supreme, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Huck, A-Force, Doctor Strange, Invincible Iron Man, Totally Awesome Hulk, or Vision?
No, I heard most of it, actually. I just didn't want to talk in the cab and totally freak out this idiot cab driver. So, I appreciate everything you guys talked about. I did make sure to leave little snide comments about some of the things that I liked and did not like. I wanted to, I'm pulling up my sheet for episode 151 now, and sometimes it'll just help to see it visually in front of me. I want to see if there's anything else I wanted to mention. I don't think so. I think we can move on. And if something comes to me, especially with something that I may have read that I didn't have a chance to put down, we'll talk. So go ahead with your books.
All right. All right, Tim. Tim, you're muted still.
Tim, you're muted.
There we go.
Let me get down to mine here. Invincible Iron Man number 5, the end of the first arc. From Brian Michael Bendis, Dave Marquez, Justin Ponsor, and hopefully I'm not forgetting anyone else on the creative team. I really enjoyed this issue. I'm digging Bendis' Iron Man. Dave Marquez's art definitely helps a lot with this because it's just a visually stunning book. But I like the little tag team of Iron Man and Dr. Doom working together. again, I guess this is another series that kind of was playing with the magic aspect of things, with Madame Mask stealing magical artifacts and trying to use them. We get a short guest appearance by Doctor Strange.
The facial hair bros.
Yeah, facial hair bros.
Yes! The awesome facial hair bros make another appearance.
As Tony Stark as Doctor Strange, you know, he was like, is this something I should be concerned about, you know, with the whole magic thing? And he's like, of course, or something along those lines. But he was like, I got it. Tony Stark makes a business offer to Mary Jane. And that's about it. But yeah, I really enjoyed this arc. And supposedly, I guess the next arc will start laying the seeds for Civil War II with the War Machines. Is the name of the next arc coming up. But yeah, it's a possible click of the week. We'll see.
Okay.
I just can't get over how good the artwork is.
Like, yeah,
Marquez. Yeah, it's super sharp. Yeah, it's super sharp.
Even when I'm done reading it, I just want to sit there and flip back through the book and just look at panels and pages and expressions and whoever the colorist is. Who's the colorist on this?
Is it Justin Ponsor?
Yep, it sure is.
He's good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very tempted whenever that first trade comes out, I'm probably going to buy it just so I can have it physical. Like you said, just to flip through and look at.
Yeah.
I've got Justice League number 47. I think this is Act 3 of the Dark Side.
Dark Side. Don't fight the urge to say seed. Side.
Spell it right and I won't have that urge. Doug and myself were discussing before the show. It's been so long since we read some of these books, trying to remember what actually happened in them.
Yeah.
But I believe this issue had, like, Wonder Woman fighting the super-powered Superman.
Mm-hmm.
We found out the name, or whoever previously had, was it Metron's chair?
Yeah, Mobius.
Mobius.
Not Moby, not the electro synth.
Not your dog,
Tim.
Who's down here asleep. Oh, and at the end, we get the reformation of a new crime syndicate. Kind of cool. All new Justice League. DC getting into their Marvel territory there.
Well, and I like it because, again, this is one of those big epic stories. Like, this is one of those stories where, you know, you feel like you're watching the heaviest hitters hit the heaviest. I really like the way that this story plays out and the way, you know, you're dealing with characters that are so overpowered and they get into these battles and this feels like the big epic storyline that they need to tell as opposed to what Justice League had been for a long time, which was, you know, an alien is murdered in Poughkeepsie and we got to figure out why he's here on Earth and, you know, these boring little stories that are easily told in some other books. Like, this is the Justice League. This is war. This is big, huge battles. This is cities in rubble. It's,
yeah, you know, this is like a mini event book every arc.
Yeah,
it really is.
That's really what people want to see in a book like this, or even in a book like Avengers. And unfortunately, a lot of times, just like what Dirk just said, is that, you know, either the editors want to lead the book down a quieter path, at least temporarily. They don't necessarily want to have to, you know, kind of develop any either ennui or boredom with these really big stories so that we can appreciate them more when they come. But I feel like that's a direction that, you know, we've seen, you know, in the cyclical comic book business, we've seen Justice League and Avengers go through that, you know? Like, well, they just have these arcs, like these big chunks of their histories that are like this.
We have the DC Universe so overlapped nowadays, where you have action and Superman and Superman Wonder Woman and Superman Batman, or Batman Superman, and then Batman and Detective and... you've got Wonder Woman, and you've got now Legends of Wonder Woman, and you've got Flash, and you've got, like, every character has their own book. Some characters have multiple books. Some characters have books where it's just the two of them teaming up outside of the Justice League.
Right.
It gets to this point where Justice League doesn't need to show anything other than the biggest stories that these teams come together to face. Like, you don't need to do the funny episode where Shazam is stuck doing monitor duty, and every time he tries to go out and do something, Flash has already gotten to it first and fixed it and whatever. Like, you don't need to do those books. You could do that in a Flash book. You could do that in a Green Lantern book. You could do that in one of those other titles. That doesn't need to be in Justice League. Justice League can be, you know, you can put a fictional 6 months in between every arc of Justice League because of the way the story is laid out, and what you read is the 5 days that they just had to pound salt in order to just get it done and destroy everything that's coming to destroy Earth.
Agreed. I just wanted to pull up the Harley's Little Black Book variant that I pulled for Justice League number 47. It's the all-color Jim Lee Harley Quinn cover. Mm. So this is the one I got in that little black bag. Did you pull any of these, Dirt?
I did not, just mainly because I don't care about Harley.
Gotcha.
If these were black bags of sketch, ink, or full color of the book I'm reading, mm-hmm. I would be interested in grabbing them. And if I really like the artwork, I might be interested in getting a set. But as far as them all being Harley Quinn-centric, I just don't care.
I just happened to, you know, I knew what the image was because the store had already opened one.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, all right, you know, it's a Jim Lee image. I'll pull that. You know, I'll just grab, pick one and just, you know, see whatever it is I get.
We already talked about Ultimates 3. Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat.
This was actually really cool. I pulled the hip-hop cover.
Mine's downstairs.
I pulled the George Perez incentive cover, which was really cool. This was awesome.
Look at you doubling up.
Yeah, right?
So,
is your apartment big enough for boxes full of all these variants?
Basement.
I see.
Basement. No, I pull select variants, but it's just the hip hop ones that, you know, I probably just doubled down and said, let me get all of them. But anyway, go on, Tim. You were saying?
I was gonna keep it short. It's in the mode of the sort of humorous books that Will Moss is editing, the Squirrel Girls, the Howard the Duck.
Right.
But this one I'll probably keep up with, hopefully. It was just a fun. I like the art is very sort of all ages. There's a lot of like humorous facial expressions from like background characters and whatnot. Patsy Walker kind of being in like cat poses when it's hilariously necessary. Again, this is one I read a couple weeks ago, so it's kind of hard to remember everything that happened in it. But it was just, again, just a fun overall read and nice art. Hope the series continues with that quality of work. Astonishing Ant-Man number 3, again, read it a while ago. I remember liking it at the time, but it was the team up between Cap, Sam Wilson, Captain America, and Ant-Man Paul. I was going to say Paul Rudd.
what's
his name? Scott Lang. Very funny. Sam Wilson needed Scott Lang's help for something. They had to probably break in somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, again, don't remember everything from it. And again, another book that happened a while ago, Dark Knight 3, The Master Race number 2.
Oh, my goodness.
I remember liking this series more than I initially thought I would. This came out, I think, the week of Christmas.
Yeah.
23rd. That was 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago by now.
I enjoyed it, too. And one of the things I enjoy about it is, you know, the story of Batman and Superman has always been like this friendship, but they're always at odds. So they always have this, like, I don't know if it's like a brotherly type thing where they, you know, they respect each other, they work together, whatever, but in the back of their mind, they're always ready to take the other one down. And that kind of animosity between them is, in this book, it's, you know, Bruce Wayne is dead, Superman, Clark Kent is gone, but you have the Bat family, the Bat universe, that part of the DC universe clashing, or at least building up to what appears to be a clash with the Superman part of the universe, with the Kryptonians from Kandor and their rebirth into the world, and it's going to come head-to-head between what's happening in the Batman part and the Superman part. So this isn't the story of Batman, and it's not the story of Batman versus Superman. It's the story of this corner of the DC universe and this other corner of the DC universe, and they're building up to some sort of confrontation. And with the way the story is working, I'm not sure it's going to work out and what's best for us, you know, for the common people of planet Earth. I'm not sure the common people of planet Earth are going to win this one. But I've enjoyed the story, and I've enjoyed the way it's, in a way, it's played with those expectations, and you see that what's really happening is this other type of story about the DC universe, but how the DC universe has these different, you know, little pockets for each character and how those clash with each other, even though we're not specifically getting a Bruce Wayne Batman story in The Dark Knight 3. I think I just confused everybody who's not...
Yeah, pretty much.
The next issue comes out soon, I think.
I know the hardcover collector's version comes out this week for number 2, so...
Oh, okay.
I'm looking forward to that.
The Legend of Wonder Woman number 1, which I think collects the first 3 digital issues, especially a retelling of Wonder Woman's origin, I want to make sure I get the artist and writer's name correct before I try to say it, because she does the art and the story. Wonder Woman. That's not it. Let's see.
Is it Renee DeLise? DeLise?
Yes. I'm bringing up my copy here. Renee DeLise, inks, colors, and letters by Ray Dillon. So the colors I especially liked. Everything just seemed bright and vibrant, is what I'm trying to say. Bright and vibrant. And the story, okay. I even like that the story deals with her mother, Hippolyta.
Hippopotamus.
Yep. And shows Diana as a young child or young girl being groomed to be the princess, but her wanting to study fighting styles so she can properly defend her land. But then everyone telling her that, you know, Themyscira hasn't needed anyone battle ready in years. And then sort of like the thought process of, since they're isolated from the world, they haven't needed to fight, and is this making them weaker in the process? And of course, like, this dangerous threat looming in the background. So, very cool. New Avengers number 4, I think, was the end of the arc where Al Ewan was doing stuff with, what's the dude from Young Avengers? Hulkling. How he's the prince of the, not the Skrulls, but the other ones, the Kree.
Right.
And this whole thing. And then, even though I didn't read whatever story, I guess it was, actually I was reading Young Avengers from Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey, where I guess they, I'm not sure if it was there, where they introduced this like evil alter ego of Wiccan. I forget what the beast was called, but you see the seeds of that future alter ego starting to manifest itself now. The mage or something like that he's called in the future. So he, I guess like the villain that they're fighting sort of puts like that, I'm not sure if he jumps spirits and jumps inside Wiccan's body or not, and that's what causes it, but it's something along those lines.
Right. I think I remember that.
Yeah, so it's kind of like seeds being planted, and we'll see what happens with that probably a year from now. Who knows?
Right, because I think what he does, I think there's like an element or an essence of the bad guy that's left in him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think that's, like you said, that's the seed that's being planted for, you know, for a year, a story a year from now.
Yeah. Robin War number 2 concludes the Robin War crossover. Overall, the crossover wasn't all that great. It involved a lot of books I enjoy, which is why I had high hopes for it. But a lot of it boils down to a bunch of people getting to say, you know, I am Robin, we are Robin, I'm not Robin. Oh.
Is that really what's happening?
That's what it felt like to me. You turn the page, someone screaming, I am Robin, you're not Robin, we are Robin, I'm not Robin.
Like Mike. If I could be like Mike, I want to be. That's all it turns into.
I am Spartacus. I am Robin.
But the main takeaway is Dick Grayson has joined the Court of Owls, or as they call it, the Parliament of Owls.
Really?
And because he did it to save everyone, basically.
Oh,
yeah, it's one of those things. So more likely, he's also doing it to infiltrate the group, since he's a spy and whatnot. So
yeah, I was gonna say, do they know that he's part of Spiral?
And, yeah,
I mean, you'd think
they know, but who knows? We have to follow Nightwing, or not Nightwing, Grayson. Follow the story in Grayson. So, and then finally, my last one, Extraordinary X-Men number 5, again finishes the initial story arc where the X-Men are reuniting and they're fighting Mr. Sinister and a clone of Scott Summers joined with Inhuman DNA.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed this a lot. Enjoyed this final issue a lot. Basically, the whole group's together. Storm has this cool speech where she's like announces to the world that, you know, the X-Men are here. They're not running. They're here to protect mutant kind and humans and Inhumans alike, but they're not going to be stepped on or ran over. If you come for them, they're going to defend themselves. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I really like this book. I don't know if you guys read the quick notes I wrote about this, but this is the main X book, and I know that Marvel has put that out there. Like, if you want to read, you know, the continuing adventures of the X-Men, this is the book to read. Not necessarily Uncanny, because Uncanny is following a different team, You know, all the other X books, in my opinion, are probably going to fall by the wayside when it comes to my physical pull list. Extraordinary is the one that I keep coming back to. This was a lot of fun to read. You know, it really does remind me of a lot of the more classic X-Men stories right now. You know, and it does have a very basic core team. You know, they may be very different versions of themselves, but if you look at it, there's a Colossus, a Jean Grey, a Wolverine, an Iceman, and a Storm. You know, right. It makes it very easy to, you know, it makes it very, very familiar and gives
these
you something.
These are all alternate multiverse versions of them?
No, I don't believe so. It's just that they've been altered in some way, you know. Or at least the two, actually, you know what? Strike that. Because two of them are, the Jean Grey and the Wolverine are.
Yeah. So is this the Jean Grey from one of the Secret Wars books?
No, it's just the young, Jean Grey.
Okay.
It's just the young Jean Grey, but the qualification was, or the caveat was, it's not, you know, like the mainstream Marvel Universe Jean Grey, who's still dead.
But it's not the all-new X-Men version of young Jean Grey.
No, it's the same one that was from all-new X-Men from Bendis' run.
Right, it is.
Oh, all right. Huh. Okay.
And that's it for my list.
Cool.
Oh, all right. So now I have to switch over to my folder of covers. Let me pull up my stuff here and put it on the internet for people to look at. All right. Sheriff of Babylon, number two. Sheriff of Babylon is a Vertigo book. This is from Tom King, the genius behind Vision. He's also doing this one. And I love this book. Like, this is Homeland, this is CSI, this is Law and Order, this is, like, every crime, drama, murder, mystery, Backstabber, The Wire, The Unit, you know, any of those type of things, it's all wrapped up together in this book. And I think part of that is because Tom King is a former CIA operative, intelligence gathering officer, so he's writing this from the perspective of someone who knows probably a little bit more than...
He knows things.
Yeah, more than your average bear.
Right.
And the story he's put together is, it's this reluctant investigation into a murder mystery. And it's one of those types of things where you know that your main character going into this is not going to get a satisfactory answer into this investigation, but he has a sense of duty, and so he's going to do it. But you know along the way that he's just going to find, like, the absolute worst of humanity that he's going to be dealing with here, and even if he figures out, you know, the mystery, it's going to be a situation that's so far above him, he can't do anything about it, but at the same time, he can't walk away from the responsibility of trying to figure out what happened. So there's just a lot of character structure and character study that's going into this book, and all the people that he meets along the way. And it's very, I guess the nicest way to put it is that it's very not politically correct in the way people talk and the way they act, the way they treat each other and refer to each other, which is somewhat refreshing to see in a book nowadays. So, like, if this...
Well, yeah, they take advantage of it being a Vertigo book one.
Yeah.
And they also take advantage of the setting, which is, you know, in a war zone.
Right. So, like, if this was a TV show, I'd be watching it. If this was a movie, I'd buy the Blu-ray. This being a comic, I'm reading every issue. I may even pick up the book, you know, when it wraps up. I don't know. I don't know if this is a 6-issue, if this is ongoing. I don't know what the deal is behind it, because honestly, I never intended to read it. It was just one of those things that when the first issue was sitting in front of me, I figured I'd flip through it and give it a shot, and I loved it. And I read issue 2, and I love it. And I have every intention of reading this story, you know, until it ends. This is just 2 issues in, and I'm just blown away when I read it. And it's one of those books that when it comes in, you know, Tuesday morning, I get all the comics, I'm sorting through them, getting them ready for Wednesday, I immediately stop, I read it, and then at the end of the day, when everything's been put away and filed and I'm done and I'm sitting on the couch at home, I read it again slower and more in depth. It's just one of those books that I want to know what's happening right away, so I absorb it, but then I want to go back later and read through it, you know, slowly and get all the nuances and all the little things that are being thrown in the background and the way the characters interact and the way the story is structured. So I just love this book, and I can't recommend it enough.
Cool.
All right, next, Rocket Raccoon and Groot number one. This is one that I'm, again, reading with my son because of the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, and I expected it to be a fun, quirky, Saturday morning-ish type book, the way Groot has been, the way Rocket Raccoon kind of was, and it is.
Sort of.
But the thing that really got me on this title more than anything else is that there's actually a much bigger story going on here. You're jettisoned to the other end of the universe somewhere. You meet these two characters that are basically Rocket Raccoon and Groot, but right. different versions, some other point in space. And they go on this little adventure. And during this adventure, you meet the actual Rocket Raccoon and the actual Groot, but something has happened. And their reality has completely changed. Yeah, something. We don't know what the story is. We don't know how they got there. We don't know what the dynamics are of what's going on here. But I was just really interested in the way that they built that story and the way they changed things and the way that there's actually this bigger arc to it with a lot of questions that need to be answered.
Right.
And I didn't expect that from Rocket Raccoon and Groot.
What's funny is that it seemed like, and to touch a little bit upon what you were just talking about, it seemed like this story is just a little bit more involved and probably takes a little bit more comprehension on the part of the reader than some of the other Rocket and Groot stories that we've had in the last two, you know, individual series.
Right.
So it's interesting. Maybe they're writing a story that maybe needs a little bit more of a more mature sensibility so you can kind of understand it. Although, like you said, the kid-friendly stuff is still there.
Like, there's still funny jokes in there. There's still right. some toilet humor and, you know, whatever. But and maybe that may be a good book right now on the market, where you have that book where you can hand it to a 10-year-old and they can read it and they can understand, but then there's also something in the back of their brain kind of pulling them towards something bigger, you know.
Right.
They get a little more out of it than they do just a regular issue of some random book. So I just enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. I enjoyed the Groot series that just ended. You know, I thought mm-hmm. it was a well-done kids book, but I was impressed with the way that this just pushed things, nudged them just a little bit more up the ladder.
Agreed.
All right, Action Comics 48. Which I know is going to be a surprise to some people, that I would, you know, put this on books that I wanted to talk about here, but this is kicking off the Vandal Savage storyline in full blast now. We're getting into the meat of the story here. And much in the same way that Justice League sets up these big epic battles, these big, you know, boisterous interactions between characters, that's what this is doing also. Starting here with Action 48, we've seen threads of this other story being woven through the different Superman, Superman Wonder Woman, Superman Batman, all of these other books. But here in Action is now where it's really starting, like, okay, now this is going to be the focus. We're getting into this big event for the Superman books, and it's loud, it's big, it's, you know, getting into the meat of the battle. And we're dealing with this newer version of Superman that, you know, we haven't dealt with before in a big story like this. So I really enjoyed this, and I really enjoy the possibilities it's opening. I'm really enjoying the PAX storytelling in this, and I'm really looking forward to see where this Vandal Savage, Savage Dawn, I believe is what it's called, where it's going to end up going with this. Dark Knight 3, we've talked about. Okay, Grim Fairy Tales 118. I'm actually going to bring this up. This Vision had not been on one of the earlier lists. I would have been talking about Vision, but since Vision was covered, I deleted it off of my list, and I put Grim Fairy Tales 118 up here because I want to talk about it. And I know a lot of people listening to this show, watching it on YouTube, they're going to be wondering, Grim Fairy Tales, like, why the heck are they going to be talking about this book on Comic Book Chronicles? And the thing is, if I hadn't read this book myself, I'd be right there with you. One of my New Year's resolutions was to try to read more of the review books that are sent to us. And be honest with you, a lot of the Zenoscope books that have come, you know, through my mailbox, they come in, they go in a folder. I never look at them, honestly. Several years ago, you're muted, Agent 70. You're
I was just going to say, you distribute them, and then we don't look at them, so it's kind of sad. That's all I was going to say.
Okay, yeah, so like I said, I've been trying to really focus more on reading the stuff that they actually send us. And Grim Fairy Tales, several years ago, I tried to read a couple of them because, again, they were review copies sent to us, and I felt, you know, obligated to give them a look. And they were sorority sisters being chased by a werewolf, and they were in the shower, and they were having pillow fights, and they were, you know, all of that B-movie type Skinamax late night stuff. And okay, I see what these are, and I put them away, and I never touched them again, you know, is really what it came down to. So I opened up Grim Fairy Tales 118. I figured I'll give it a shot. It's been a long time. Last time I probably read one was it was like issue 75 or something like that. So it's been a while. So I figured I'd give it a shot. And this book is nothing like what I expected. I expected cleavage and women in peril and, again, more of that type of stuff. And instead, what I got was basically a story of the classic days of the X-Men in the Xavier Institute. I mean, that's technically what it's working towards nowadays. They've built a school for people who are gifted with magic instead of being mutants. There are older characters who have been dealing with the magical realms for a long time who are trying to help them to use their powers and cultivate their powers and, you know, how they're going to deal with the evil things in the world as well as the rest of humanity that doesn't understand them. And it really was that classic X-Men type of story that you occasionally see in the X-Men books nowadays, but there hasn't really been...
But a few and far in between.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think when they did Spider-Man and the X-Men was kind of the last time we saw any sort of glimpse of that. And that was even, cool. Yeah, and that was even in the background. It was more about Spider-Man not fitting in than the mutants not fitting in. But I was really impressed. You know, the artwork was pretty good. It was definitely easy to read. The characters were relatable and understandable. And it actually made me think, well, you know what? Next time when I see Grim Fairy Tales 119 come through, I'm going to have to read it. I am going to have to pay attention to it because I did enjoy this.
Cool.
I didn't hate myself for reading it afterwards. So I know Roddy Cat has said on, I don't remember if it was on Twitter or if it was in our Hangout chat the other day, but he had said, like, Robin Hood, one of the books from Zenoscope, was actually pretty good. It was a vigilante story. It was not, you know, the B-movie Scream Queen type of stuff. So that might be another one for people to look into. But I was really impressed with this book, and I'm going to pay attention to it for at least a while and see how this storyline plays out. Let's see. Justice League, we talked about. Last Contract. This is another random book that I just decided to pick up and read because it was a review copy that was sent to us from Boom Studios. And this is about a retired hitman I believe he's in his 70s, living a quiet life now, just trying to, you know, keep away from everyone. And suddenly these two guys come up on his house and they're going to assassinate him because of something he has done. So something in his past is catching up to him. But he is so old and frail now, he's not sure if he's going to be able to, you know, fight back or get the ending. And it's a story that's not necessarily 100% original. We've seen stories kind of like this with stuff like Red from Vertigo several years ago. And they've definitely done movies about the hitman that's over the hill that,
right,
you know, is trying to make that one last stand. But it was very entertaining. It was well written. And the artwork, I thought, was really good in this book. It has a unique style. You can kind of see it here on the cover, where it's drawn like pencil outline, and then it's got this wash kind of watercolor, you know, filling in the space. And so it has this very unique look to it that I really enjoyed as well. That plays into the story, because in the story he's in, I believe it's Louisiana, so it's dark and dank, and you know, there's a lot of, you know, nasty river water and gunk and you know, shootouts and dirty old houses and stuff like that. So the artwork, you know, is well suited for the story that it's telling here. And so overall, I thought it was a pretty good read, and it was definitely interesting and one that I want to look forward to continuing on. We had Marvel Web Warriors, number 3. I'm pretty sure you read this, didn't you, Agent 70? You're muted still, again. You're muted.
I know. I was trying to move the mouse over from the other screen. I was just going to say, go ahead and tell me. I did not have a chance to read this, though, but go ahead and let me know if this was good.
Okay, well, I mean, it was good.
Okay,
and
awesome.
That's one of the things that I wanted to talk about it, because I've talked before about how I enjoy multiverse, you know, stories in general. And having this one, you know, my son wants to read it, and that, of course, gives me an excuse to read it. And that's the main reason why I even picked it up, because I'm not reading Amazing Spider-Man right now. But I like the interaction of the characters. We've seen that Spider-Man has built this team of Spider-Men from these different universes to, you know, watch over things.
And Spider-Women.
And Spider-Women, sure. Well, I kind of think of it like actor. Like, I don't want to say actress because I think that kind of cheapens it, you know. It's like,
sure,
you're an actor, you're male or female. So anyway, there's a team of Electros. Evil Electros that are also banding together, that have found the multiverse, that are working to subvert it, to take over it, and whatever. And so we're seeing this team versus team, you know, building up into what, in this issue, we finally get this big fight. We get a nice big confrontation of the two teams coming head to head. And what it comes down to is the Spider-Men are losing. The Electros are more powerful, they're more bloodthirsty, they're in greater number, and so they actually take over the headquarters that the Spider-Men have been using and push them out into some alternate universe. They have to open a pocket and make a run for it, and they end up landing on this steampunk world where you've got this female superior Spider-Man type character with the Dr. Octopus Iron Spider type arms on the background. And Gwen, I think it's Gwen Stacy, Spider-Gwen, ends up jumping to another universe where she finds an Uncle Ben who is actually superpowered. Mm-hmm. And he's the older Spider-Man retired.
Right.
And so again, we're getting glimpses into more multiverses, more alternate universes, which I enjoy. And it's just fun. There's humor. There's heart to it. And we have this evil team that's, you know, this team of Electros is actually overpowering them, which makes right. them a good force for them to fight against.
What I was going to say, it's what's interesting about the multiverse aspect in this, especially with regards to Electro, is that you run into an Electro in an alternate universe that actually has his act together, and because of the infinite possibilities, there's going to be a few Electros in the multiverse that has, you know, that has his or her act together. So banding them together, you know, helps all the other kind of schlub Electros, you know, combat, you know, various Spider-Men. So
it also makes the Electros, some of the other lesser Electros, jealous and envious.
Sure.
Because they thought for sure they would be the leader, and they see this other guy who, you know, everybody gravitates towards, to is naturally he should be the leader, and so they feel left out, which is a funny dynamic to throw.
Oh, absolutely, out. Absolutely. I'm glad that you're enjoying this, sir, because, you know, it never struck me as one of those books that's going to bring in a lot of readers, but I'm glad that, you know, you're enjoying it, that it's kid-friendly, and, you know, I'm hoping that it gains some traction in comic shops so that it can keep being, you know, so that it can keep on going on.
It's definitely one of those sleeper books. I think it gains a lot by word of mouth. I don't know that there are necessarily a lot of people, you know, they're like, oh, I buy Silk and Spider-Gwen, so maybe I should pick up Web Warriors. I don't think it works that way with this book. I don't see, you know, a lot of people buying it. I think a lot of people who buy Amazing Spider-Man think that they don't need this one because it doesn't tie into their story, which, for me, is a bonus. Like, that's one of the attractive things of the book, is you don't have to read any other Spider-Man books on the market in order to read this one.
Right. You just have to be vaguely familiar with the ideas behind Spider-Verse. I was going to say, would you put this book up on the shelf with a sign that says, if you like Spider-Gwen, take a look at this?
I don't read Spider-Gwen, so I don't know.
Okay.
I could say, a lot. You know, I'll tell you what I do deal with is a lot of parents that come in and say, I've got a child who's 10, 11, 12 that likes comics and movies and video games, and I want to get them something that I have no idea what to look for. This is a pretty safe one that you can say, I think they'll enjoy it, and I'm pretty sure they don't have it.
Right,
you
know? Right. And obviously the title is very strategic because it does pop up in the TV guide, right?
I guess that's true. All right. Cool. I got two more books left to finish off my list, so we'll try to get through them somewhat quickly here and wrap things up. Spider-Man Deadpool number one, I wanted to mention because I actually enjoyed this. I didn't think I really would.
I'm surprised that you rated this so well.
Yeah, this very much seemed like a gimmick book. This very much seemed like a flavor of the month. We're going to throw these two characters together just so we can have another book to sell, you know, is really what it comes down to. It's more of a marketing than an actual storytelling, you know, type of endeavor. But I have to admit, I actually laughed out loud a couple times reading this one. This is one that...
Well, the E.T. references got me.
Well, and especially, like, the normal Deadpool series, it has elements of humor within the storytelling, but it's not a funny book, per se, like it has been in the past. Whereas this book is a funny book that has some violence in it and has superhero stuff in it. But I would consider this a, you know, a sitcom comic that stars superheroes.
I'm inclined to agree with that. That's a good analysis.
Because Deadpool nowadays, he'll crack some jokes and one-liners, but he's no longer filling swimming pools with pancakes and doing any of that type of bizarre stuff, where I feel like that's the type of thing that could happen in here.
Sure. And it helps to have Spider-Man be the foil.
Right, because Spider-Man...
He's a semi-straight man, semi-comedic foil.
Right, because he's also... Spider-Man is... I don't remember if it was in this book or one of the others, but he... somewhere recently he made a comment where he's like, I'm the funny one. Why is this guy telling all the jokes? And I don't remember... It might have been in this one. It's been a couple weeks since this came out, but, you know, I have to say, I have to give it credit because I didn't expect much out of it, and I really enjoyed it.
I have to echo the same thing. I know I've joked about how the only reason why I picked up issue number one is because of the Paid in Full hip-hop cover. But I, too, found myself, you know, entertained by this book, and I'm curious to read the second edition.
And then plus you have the Vision comic in the back of it, so if you bought the paper copy, you got a free comic of one of the best other books on the market today. So, all right, finally, Swamp Thing number one. Now, Tim did a review of Swamp Thing number one, and he didn't seem to care for it very much. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I don't know if it's...
Is that Len Wein writing it?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. And
Kelly Jones
doing art? Wow.
Yeah. So, for me, this was a throwback book of the classic horror comics from the 70s that I enjoy going back and reading quite a bit. And one of the big problems with doing a horror comic is that you can't really do gore in a comic book because you're looking at a drawn page. And so just seeing something bloody and seeing, you know, a head popping off a body or whatever, there's not as big of an impact because it doesn't look real. It's in a comic. And you can't really build suspense in a comic because you can read it at your own pace. So you can read it quickly, you can read it slow. So the idea of having a suspenseful buildup in a storyline just doesn't play out in reading a comic. And that's a problem a lot of horror comics have, is they're trying to do what movies do and TV shows do, but do it on a page. And it just doesn't work. And the thing I liked about Swamp Thing is that it doesn't try to do any of those things. What it does is what comics can do well, is to build a sense of uneasiness. There's just a bad feeling quality to what's going on, where you can tell that bad things are going to happen, but it's not telegraphed where or when or who it's going to happen to. Or one of the things that this book does is your main villain, the monster, so to speak, that Swamp Thing is tracking down and fighting, is someone who you feel bad for because of the situation he was put in that made him this way. So he's sympathetic. But at the same time, he's doing terrible things. So you feel like this instinctive nature that you want to see that character saved, but at the same time, because of what he's doing, you want to see him destroyed. So in your own mind, it puts you in this place in your mind where you have to weigh those options of how far do you go to save somebody from themselves, and how far do you go to stop them from hurting other people. And that's the situation that Swamp Thing is in. So as a horror comic goes, it's playing on those beats of just building that tension within the character, as opposed to other books that try to be horror comics where it's just people getting their faces slashed off and arms getting ripped off and... You know somebody's in the house, but they're going to be around the corner and you don't know where. And that stuff just doesn't play out in comics as well as the story stuff that they can do with it. So I like Swamp Thing because of that, and because of that, you know, having Lin Wein writing it, having Kelly Jones doing the artwork feels like an old school, 70s. I wanted to put on, some Steely Dan in the background and sit in a velvet, shag rug van and read this book, because it just puts you in that mindset because of that. So I enjoyed it a lot because of that, and I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. And it's disconnected from all the other Swamp Thing stuff that we've seen in DC in the last few years, so there's no... there's no talk of, you know, Justice League Dark or whatever. We do get another character of the DC supernatural world to come in, but it's not Constantine, which is nice. It takes you to a different part of the dark corners of the DC universe. So I enjoy that it disassociated itself with some of that other stuff and rebuilt it here as something different. So that's cool. My list of books.
Clicks cool. of the month.
Mine's easy. I'm still going to go with Secret Wars number 9. Just very quickly, I didn't have a chance to really expand upon this, but my notes that you guys read on the air probably said it all. Ultimately, I liked how this was wrapped up. I liked some of the little beats that Hickman and Ribic made sure to put into the last issue. I love the standoff. The final battle between the first half of the final battle between Black Panther and Doom, and then Reed and Doom. And, you know, one of the things that, that it came down to was, you know, these two powerful, massive intellects battling each other, and one finally conceding that, yeah, the other one probably would have done this a lot better. And I thought that was pretty fun to read.
I'm going Secret Wars number 9 as well.
Nice!
Oh. What do you think Roddy would have picked?
He didn't put one down?
No, I don't think so, did he?
Roddy, nope. If you're watching, let us know what your pick of the week is.
He would say, no, he wouldn't say that one. Nope, he wouldn't say that one. He would probably say Secret Wars, I would guess, looking at his list. So I'm going to be the one who's got to be different, just because that's who I am, is the hipster.
Just go Sheriff of Babylon, yeah, I was
going
to say.
Sheriff of Babylon, and that's where I'm going with. Because like
that's
I said,
what I was about to guess.
I love this book, and I can't recommend it enough. Not for children. Don't let your 10-year-old read it, definitely. But it's definitely a good one to check out. And we just lost Tim. Oh, now he's back.
I was taking my head off. Got too hot. All right. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in to another exciting episode of Comic Book Chronicles. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBCon. Roddy Cat, who's not here but contributed, of course, is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. PCN Dirt is at PCN underscore Dirt on Twitter and PopCultureNetwork.com.
Yay!
As he's on vacation.
That's right.
Yeah, and I'm fading out of existence. Back to
going back to Earth 2.
That's right. At least your bottom third works tonight. Mine's back on the fence.
I went back to Internet Explorer. That's the only way I can get it to work.
Goodness, I got to go back to Firefox. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Agent 70 is at Agent underscore 70.
Yeah, I made it back!
So we'll be back next week, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Thursday night, and we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey! What's on your